Hey, welcome once again to another episode of Beachside Nerds. This is Glenn, aka Headcase, here with my boys Remy, Aberrant,
aka Aberrant.
Yes, sir.
And the Kyle, aka Evo.
All right, this week we're gonna be rambling a bit.
Hopefully not.
On our favorite characters, Kyle, Remy.
Favorite and our characters, favorite stories.
And our favorite stories. And why? Why are these our favorite stories and our favorite characters? So, Kyle.
No, why me? Why? Okay, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm like, no. My favorite character. Okay, if it's... you see?
So, Kyle, who's your favorite character, Kyle?
I have multiple favorites.
The one deep within your heart, Kyle. The last man standing. Or woman. Standing.
The last one standing would always be Jean Starwin.
From Outlaw Star.
That is my favorite anime and story of all time. It's a nice space adventure. I have loved the dynamic of the star where he's just doing things to live and going by his creed that he wants to not end up to a point. Well, I'm not going to spoil what happens in the anime. But
the anime is 100 years old.
Okay, well then, spoilers then. Because he and his father were trying to be like people of the stars. It's, again, it's, they move around all over the place. In the solar system, was easy in this anime, but he and his father had dreams, and some space pirates came, killed his father. Those dreams were lost, and he just became just like a bounty hunter, just going around the place doing random things to just get by, get money, and have a fun time. So he had it in his soul for all the years that he would not let that tragedy keep him down. He kept on pushing forward, even though he strayed. Strayed. Because he did see the stars. He did travel the galaxy. But he always wanted to have his own personal ship. And the sketchy ways he had to go through about life to get to that point. Luck turned to him and gave him what he wanted, and he made it his best opportunity in life to what was given to him. So things just fell into play for him at one point later down his life that all just turned around for him. And yeah, he had his friends now, his
he basically got like a myriad
family.
Crew,
yeah, yeah, crew of
different people with different abilities.
Races.
But what makes, you see, now you're telling me what it is that he did and what happened to his life, but you're not really telling us
what about him makes him your favorite character.
What about him?
Is it his style?
His style. He's able to go and try and manipulate things to his own benefits. Because at the end of the day, when he's doing bounty hunting, he has to be clever. He has to go out and be the go-get-you guy, kind of guy. He is the one that, you know, he'll have your back, but then don't double cross him because he's not going to end well. He, in itself, in that anime, he found creative ways, very creative ways to get what he wanted. He didn't just, like, give up and that's about it the majority of the time. He just like, I'm going to do the wackiest and stupid thing that might work to make it happen.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, and that's what I find funny about it. He didn't stick to any cut or paste way of doing things. He just did it and did it the way he could in the timing that was presented to him and made it work.
Okay, so was it like love at first sight with this character, or was it like after several episodes or rewatching the series?
The first run of watching the whole thing, because I think I watched off almost though. I watched it on VHS for people that are too young that do not know what a VHS is. It's a video cassette. Yes, we're ancient here. Years ago when I rented it, and I think I watched off the majority or maybe half of it in one night, and from the halfway point, I had fallen in love with this character. Like, hey, this guy is fun. This guy speaks to me. So, Outlaw Star has always been my favorite. The overall anime itself is fun, is zany. It has elements that I like. I do love things when, again, anime, a movie I mentioned this sometime back for people to go and watch is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I like things where you go into a crazy universe because everything is not cut and paste when you go into the universe. It's just like, hey, I breathe oxygen, so you must breathe oxygen this way too, or breed something, and what you think it should be is not. And that's what I like. When you go outside of the regular scope of people's thought patterns and things happen.
So you like a bit of eccentric things, imaginative things out of the box.
Yes, because I can't go to another planet and expect to say, hey, this is, you know, sometimes you're watching a movie, anime and so forth, and the people on the other planet speak the exact same language as you, have a toilet mm-hmm. similar to you, and like, are these things universal?
Well, I would take it as, it's a subtle sign that humanity has spread their influence so far.
It's a subtle sign that somebody was lazy and did not try and think of another way to say, hey, these people do these things in a different way.
And so sticking on the topic of favorite characters and favorite stories, what would make a character your favorite character? Well, I guess you kind of touched on that. So let's say this now. What would make a story your favorite story? What attracts you to the story? Yes, you pointed out that you like the story to be outside the box. You like to see eccentric things, imaginative things. Is there anything else that would make a story like your favorite story?
Now, it comes down to the nickname I have for the podcast, Evo. The evolution of the universe and the world around it. The world building and the expanse of it. When you can just keep on going on forever when the story has given you so much. It can create a lifetime plus of extra spin-offs or adventures in your mind or other people's minds and psyche. So that's the whole fun part about it. It just leaves you. It doesn't just drop off at the point. It just keeps on going and going and going. The main person or people that created the story gave you enough that there's infinite amount of possibilities. And that's what drives me for a good story a lot of times. That when you can have a good amount of adventure, and you can see, like, for instance, Lord of the Rings, you can see the different races. You can hear their different thoughts, beliefs, who hates who for what and so forth, their abilities. That's all fun because, you know, you can go and expand on why is it that case with the dwarves? Why is it that case with the eagles? Why is it that case with the wizards, the elves, everybody? And then you just keep on seeing, and then you can start mixing. Why he and him hate her and all that? Why are they warring with who? Why did not they not help them? Again, it just keeps on expanding. Questions. Just questions upon questions. The main people gave you answers to the main questions that are part of the story. But then now you have your own questions like, why?
And that's actually a pretty good point as well. Because I think the essence of a good story is one that reels you in and provides mysteries that you could solve. I'm going to come back to you. Because you're a multifaceted dude. Most of us here, we have varying degrees of things that we enjoy. And so I think that the other favorite characters that you have would provide us more, you know.
You know what? He wants me to say it. One of my favorite characters as well in the Marvel Universe. No,
not yet.
I know that you're alluding to, but I'll leave that one alone.
Remy, what about you? Who's one of your favorite characters or the top on your list?
Are we limited to anime?
No, man. The world is your oyster.
This would get kind of... So, there's one series that I've watched at least 5 times that I would say is overall my favorite thing that I've, my favorite piece of media I've seen on TV, which is The Wire.
The Wire.
And okay. My favorite character in The Wire is, forgetting Michael K. Williams' character right now.
Remember the actor, but not the
Omar. Character. Omar Little in The Wire. I don't know how many people have seen The Wire, but it's about the drug trade in Baltimore, and it gets into a lot of the depth of why drug trafficking happens, how it affects communities, how it affects the kid, especially in these communities, how it affects growth of people. So it's very real world. I think where they really key to that show was that they filmed in Baltimore and they got people from Baltimore to be actors in the show, so they could see, you can get the real feeling of what it was like in that time to grow up among those kind of people. And each season focused on a different part of society when it comes to Baltimore. Like the first season was about the cops and the drug dealers. The second season was about the docks and people who unloaded and loaded tradespeople. So how they were like losing their jobs and how the union was treating them and how the union would save their jobs and stuff like that within that area. And then one season was about schools, how the government takes away resources from inner city kids and forces them into, you know, these lives of end them having to do crime or sell drugs on the side, and how it affected them emotionally coming up in disparate families where they didn't have anything and they're treated, they either abused or had no resources, so they resort to begging and stealing and stuff like that. And then the final season was about, reporters and the media and how stories can get blown out of proportion and how the government, how governmental institutions use the media to lie to the people. And, you know, when you vote, how they promise all these things but never come through with them. So the it just has so many facets that it just makes such a good show. People don't even like season two that much for some reason. And I thought every season of that show was amazing.
I've heard of The Wire, but I never watched it. I thought it was just another police procedural. So, and I'm not a huge fan of those types. So I kind of just avoided it.
And but I think it's nothing like a police procedural.
The way you're describing it, it sounds a lot like social commentary.
It's a lot of social commentary. And then you see, to me, if you want to understand the world better, because you can apply tons of the concepts that are happening in The Wire to everyday life very easily in your communities, how you can see how governmental officials become corrupt even if they have good intentions. You can see how people with good intentions get changed to, you know, end up doing bad things. You can see how kids are affected in their growth, how people end up going from promising to crackhead on the street. And it kind of, I see people will see a crackhead or something and be like, oh, you need to just go find work. And that's it. But they don't know that guy. They don't know this person's story. They don't know where they came from. They don't know how they got to this point. And they lack a lot of empathy for people in general, and lack of understanding of one another. And to me, that show is one of the best shows for broadening your perspective as just a human being, and realizing that, you know, there's lots of gray area to, you know, to everything, to even the most comically evil person. You find out that this person had all this going on for them to get here.
Yeah, and I mean, we do that a lot. Eh? We tend to be dismissive of people.
Yeah,
because I mean, we have a lot of our own stuff going on. And we get wrapped up in that and tend to limit the amount of empathy and time that we have to, you know, for other people. You mentioned that the favorite character that you had. Now, I did a quick Google and I noticed that the show has a very high rating. I think it's 9.3 or 9.5 or something like that, which is pretty high for a show. But you did mention that Omar is your favorite character. Any particular reason why that character stood out more than others for you?
Omar stands out because Omar is the coolest person. Like, Omar is just, he's that wise uncle that you just, anytime you come around this person and you can talk to them, they always have something that's smart to say. They don't always follow their own advice, but anything they tell you is just like, oh, I never really saw it that way. That's really smart. And people just feared him, but he also understood. You could see his love for his people and how much he cared about how, like, life turned out for his people and people in his community. Like, he always said that he never turned his gun on a civilian. His job was robbing drug dealers, and he only robbed, like, drug dealers. And basically, a lawyer called him, like, saying he's a terrible person because he robs drug dealers. And he said, well, I rob drug dealers, you rob the people, because you're a lawyer, you know?
Yeah.
So the wise things he had to say, the way that he related to people, his goodness, his kindness, but also his edge and dark side and lack of fear for anybody is what makes him such a cool character. Definitely like my favorite character.
I have another question for you, and it's a question I didn't ask Kyle, but I think I might probably ask him later. Was there a moment when you were kind of either turned off by your favorite character, by Omar, or if not, when you felt a bit disappointed?
The only time I can say I was disappointed with Omar was the end. Like, the way, that's a big spoiler, but I guess the show is kind of old, but the way he goes out is disappointing. But it was poetic in a way, because he is like, oh, I'm basically invincible, everybody's scared of me or whatever. But, you know, kids kids don't care about anything. And he ends up getting KO'd by a kid that just doesn't really, this kid is just a generally, you know, one of those bad apple types that been around on the corner selling drugs and running with hard people all his life, and he just had a gun one day and just killed him and he was just and walked off, and that's how he goes out after like being the coolest character in the show, like going toe-to-toe with the deadliest drug dealers that were burying bodies left and right.
But that's life.
He just gets killed by a kid.
That's life. We have a lot of random things that just happen, you know, seemingly without any explanation, you know, like,
yeah, it made sense because of the way he could have got out, he could have left, but he couldn't really change that. He couldn't change who he was. That's who he was, and he stuck to it.
Okay, cool. What about like a favorite story? Would that be The Wire as well, or do you have something? Because I know you're well read, you watch a lot of stuff as well. Do you have like a favorite story?
Favorite story? I mean,
At least one that is near and dear to you. You know, you kind of like have a connection with it, or something that got you through a specific time, and therefore you have that kind of connection with it more than others.
You know, funnily enough, anytime I read a manga series more than once, then you can count it as a good story. But I feel one that I really connected with was Ares.
Nah. Yeah, easy to say about that.
Yeah, I thought Ares was one of the best done. Some people might not like the art style and stuff like that, but Ares is one of the best pieces of writing of characters that I've seen.
Yeah.
The way that everybody is growing up and relating to each other, but also not understanding each other at the same time.
Yeah.
Because two people that come from two different worlds, basically best friends, Ares and Michael.
Yeah.
And you could tell that they really loved each other, but Michael was hellbent on his thing.
Yeah.
And Ares goes his way, which is the just way. You could see that they were going to eventually have a rift because of it.
Yeah, and I mean, Michael had his responsibilities.
Yeah.
That was at the top of his list. It's one of the things that informed his decisions. One of the things that drove him. I can see why you liked it. Ares is it's a manhwa, black and white, and it basically chronicles child soldiers.
Yeah.
And the bond that end up being developed because, I mean, they're all in the Gideon together. They're trying to survive. You know, they and the little bird.
emergency rations.
emergency food.
Yeah.
And that bird just was with him. And the bird knows what he's calling him. That's the point about it. Like, hey, emergency rations. Like,
you know, that bird is a very good example to justify what you're saying in terms of the story, Ares being a very good story and being a top contender for your favorite story. If a writer, in my opinion, is able to make a non-speaking character, you know, a seemingly throwaway character, have some depth, and you inadvertently or by design develop an emotional bond to it, to the point where, you know, it feels like you really care the outcome of that.
Yes. There's so many other characters in there that had their stories expanded well. And I'm thinking like Chiron, who was his teacher, right? Chiron, I believe, teacher.
Yeah.
And then the Red-Eyed Swordsman. Yeah, everybody, yeah. Like, even they had the Red-Eyed Swordsman's brother.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, the guy that used the Leaf Spear. I can't remember his name, but he was like, when he came in and he kind of was starting to become Ares' friend, and then he ends up like, you know,
yeah.
You have to read it.
But expanding about what Glenn spoke about, this is going to be a fun one because I know Glenn, the writer is good enough that you get emotional attachment to something that normally in life you would not normally do. Example, One Piece. What am I talking about? The Going Merry, the boat.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody that watches anime and is deep into anime, I know a lot of y'all cried for the boat.
Long tears.
And I did too. I'm not going to lie. Boat. People, if you have not watched that, understand the man made you feel tears for a boat.
Let me just jump in there real quick, right? Sorry to cut across your car, but let me tell you, okay? When I started watching One Piece was something that I always put off. Simply because I was, and I guess to some degree am, not a fan of the art style for One Piece. I'm not going to make no bones about it. That's just the reality.
At the same for me.
It does not appeal to me. Even now. Now it kind of clean up very nicely. Yeah. But that particular style of exaggeration. Again, I have nothing against exaggerated forms. I watch Clamp Productions.
Lol.
Okay? So I'm not against exaggerated forms. It's just that the particular aesthetic did not appeal to me. So I put it off for a long time. I got an injury, right? A back injury. And I was laid up for a very long time. So I was instructed not to move. I had to lie down in bed for weeks. What am I going to do? Watch One Piece. Right? So I watched One Piece. And as is inevitable, I became invested. Because one of the things that Oda does very well is develop the characters. He does the character development in a very, very well. And I'm a sucker for stuff like that. And again, the mark of a good writer is somebody that can get you invested in things, not necessarily speaking characters, but even inanimate objects.
A boat.
The ship, the boat, that they were on, and that scene where the boat, you know, comes apart, when they tell them, I'm surprised that boat is still being held together after all the stuff that it's been through. Look at they tell you about the part
the music
of the boat.
And the pacing and everything of that. The man's like, that thing is splintered.
That beam is splintered. The boat is not supposed to be floating.
But it held itself together just for its crew.
And man, I on that bed, bawling, long water, crying, coming out my eyes.
When I've never funeral fire.
Brother man, I don't cry like that.
And the spirit of the boat coming up and like, thank you. Like, oh gosh, man. Oh, well, why?
Oh, God. Oh my God, man.
Like, wow. And everybody around the boat, Luffy, everybody having
There's only two moments in One Piece, and this is not going to be a podcast about One Piece.
No.
Right?
No.
Okay.
That's
but the second thing about One Piece that caught me, emotional moment, had to do with Ace's death. Okay. When that guy, that bastard guy, I hate that man so much.
You know how many people hate him?
I hate him so much.
My girlfriend hates him like poison.
Remy. I hate him. To the point where I told Kyle and the rest of our brethren and them, I am not watching One Piece until we get to a point where Ace is getting justice. Where that guy dies. If it doesn't happen, I am not picking up One Piece ever again.
I would feel better if it's done by the hands of the guy that inherited Ace's devil fruit.
But I don't care who does it. I don't care who does it.
Sabo.
But when Ace died, up to now, I'm still a cry for Ace, Nadav. Up to now,
trust me,
it's been years.
A lot of people
but anyway,
a lot of people hate them.
You were making your point, Cal. Sorry about that tangent.
No, so my thing is, again, like, no, all I was saying is just that the situation where you do get invested by a character or item or something, and you're just like, you don't have to do anything much, you don't even do anything. It's a boat. People, you don't understand. You watch an anime, and next thing you know, tears start well up your eyes, and you start crying for a boat because it just broke apart. It's been in the many episodes, it's been with them through their adventures, it doesn't speak. It doesn't talk. It doesn't transform into a giant robot. It's just a boat. The crew is on the boat. All kind of wacky, zany things happen on the boat. Then they reach the scene where the boat, when they were trying to leave it be, because what had happened, it had, during all its travels and so forth, to the Grand Line and everything, its main, I don't know what it's called in the boat, but the main part of the boat, technically the spine of the boat, was damaged. So
the hull?
I don't think it was the hull, it was something that Frankie called it.
It's like the main beam that runs from the front to the back. And
yeah, the main
basically
support
provides
of the boat.
The spine.
It was damaged. He said, the only thing you can do is scuttle the ship. Yeah. Luffy said they don't want to do it, but they have to let the boat go. That turned into a problem because it was a gift from Usopp's people. And it created tension between Luffy and Usopp till Usopp left the crew. Usopp later came back, but that's a different story. And while they were having their big fight and wondering how they could get away from the scene, and they left the boat however far away from them, the boat come through the tides by itself to rescue them.
Yeah, that was an OP moment. I call bullshit on that.
But no, you see,
but the way it happened was still good.
They directly started to show you the boat's spirit was repairing itself.
I call
since
that
Skypiea.
That was shenanigans.
So you know, but they already, you see, they explained the whole thing about
Kyle, please.
In Skypiea, they directly explained about the whole thing about boats or certain objects getting spirits. And they did explain that. So if they didn't explain that, then it would just come off as pure BS. But they directly explained that early in the story.
It felt very plot armory when I saw it.
Well, no, because
I just went with it because it
many
was a very arcs
emotional before
thing.
That, the Water 7 arc, that they already explained about that. And then you see the boat there. You see, like, Usopp looking at something. You see, like, a shadowy kind of see-through kind of ghost taking wood and beating on the ship to repair certain holes and patches and so forth. He wondering what that is. But prior to that, they had explained about certain ships and so forth. Sometimes when it's loved or get enough, well, I don't know what to say. But as I say, it can't be plot armor because there was many arcs before that whole
love
outcome.
And affection.
So yeah, love and affection towards it and so forth. And a loving crew or whatever. The boat gets a spirit. And that spirit made the boat go. And then it carried them away. And just as it carried them away and they land them and everybody feeling good, you're snapping too. The whole boat just... snap into.
Yeah, it was a pretty emotional stuff.
That was the end of that boat. And all they can do after that is just light it on fire to just Viking funeral it. Just give it a nice funeral pyre. And again, while it's burning, you see like the energies from the boat coming out, sprinkling all the place, little bars of light. And then you see the spirit of the boat
the anime twinkle star.
Yeah,
thing.
And you see all them seeing that. And then they just get highly emotional. And you hear Luffy say, "I'm sorry, I broke this on you," and so forth. "I wish whatever," and so forth. And all them crying or apologizing for what they might have done on the boat. And I'm just like,
Kyle, is that a tear in your eye right now, Kyle?
And I'm just like, you need a moment, yeah, Kyle. This is a boat. You this a is moment. A boat, but I crying for a boat as well. Again, it was well put together for the episode. And it was one of the hallmarks of an anime and a good story writing, as I tell you. As I said, when you can expand a universe like that, and as well with the writer giving you what you want, is fun. Now, just a quick one. Mm-hmm. Like, another character for me, as I said, Jean Starwin, another main favorite in live-action movies, will always be my boss from Die Hard. Die Hard is my ultimate movie of all time.
McLean?
Can I need to say anything more about Mr. McLean? And in retrospect, the same thing with Jean Starwin. The man is put in the worst situation, and the man say, hey, he could do whatever, whole bunch of terrorists and whatever, and so forth around him, and he say he could do his goal, he could find every zany stupid way. Look at the elevator scene where you put the dress the man up in Santa Claus, the dead body in Santa Claus, just to mess with these people's heads. The man do all kind of thing and then came out top at the end of the day. He didn't give up once. Just, well, I'm in this bad pickle, but I'm going to make it work.
As well, I always remember the scene where he's like walking on glass.
Exactly. You walking on glass and you still plotting like, I'm walking on glass. I'm putting out giant shards of glass out my foot.
That was pretty iconic though.
I'm good.
Every time I think of Die Hard, I think of him in that bloody,
the
white beater vest, right? And the brown pants or whatever color pants they were, barefoot,
give up.
With his foot wrapped in bandages, the bag slung over his back, he bloody up and cut up, and he got the machine gun in his hand, and he's just running.
And he's not giving up, he just mean it. That's why I watched Die Hard definitely over 100 or something times now. No, I'm serious.
I've probably seen that movie maybe 3 times.
No. It's my favorite movie of all time. No. It's just like some people will say, hey, that doesn't much because A Christmas Carol is a movie that used to be on. I don't know if they still do it on TBS where they had 24 hours of that movie.
A Christmas Story?
A Christmas Story.
Yeah, I've seen A Christmas Story every year at Christmas for probably TBS, like 30 years.
Yeah, TBS. Yeah, same here. TBS, when it was on TBS, I think used to have 24 hours of this movie.
Yeah, oh my God. Over and over and over.
Every Christmas.
Okay, yeah. So in regards to Ares, Remy, I went and checked up the name of the author. Mm-hmm. He's also the artist as well. His name is Ryu, I can't even pronounce that, Guem, G-E-U-M, mm-hmm. Chell. They tend to have, oftentimes they would have like the Japanese spelling of his name and the Korean spelling of his name. Now, the reason why I went and looked for his name is because Ares was the first manhwa that he did.
Yeah.
As his own project, as artist and writer. And then he did another one that didn't receive as much success called Nephilim, right?
Yeah.
Now,
Nephilim John.
Why he's important to me in particular is because he also worked with one of my favorite manhwa writers right now. Name, oh Lord, what's his name? Oh gosh. But anyway, I'll find him. But he worked with that guy, is Wugak. That's his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he did martial artist Lee Gwak with the author of, with Ryu. He did it with Ryu. And after reading hundreds of manhwa, Korean and Chinese, I found that, without even realizing it, that Wugak's stories tend to all fall within my favorites list and my recommendations. Mm. His stories tend to stand out because, for lack of a better term, manhwa tend to be all trash stories. Like, rinse and repeat, recycled, generic trash, right? And they barely, like, hint at proper storytelling and character development. They just
like give tales you, of demons and gods.
Yeah, just the barest hint, right? Because they know their audience. Their audience are just there for the moments, right? The big epic fight scenes, the fan service or whatever.
Yep.
But he seemed to take the opposite approach. He writes very good stories. He follows the rules. And therefore, his stories tend to stand out for me. Somebody like me who tends to appreciate good story, good writing, good storytelling. And when I read martial artist Lee Gwak, I saw immediately the art style was that of Aries. And then I researched, found out it was him and whatnot and whatnot. Martial artist Lee Gwak, and I've said this in our groups, is the perfect martial arts manhwa for me. Well, it's the perfect. Because when you sit down and you start checking the boxes in terms of what makes a good story, and I would like us to get into that next. What makes a good story? What are the elements of a good story? How can we identify a good story? When you start ticking the checkboxes, then you realize that it ticks majority, if not all, of those checkboxes. But again, with the art style, it's a hard pill to follow. Wugak went on to produce other works that are now hitting certain people's top 10 list, top 5 list. For example, there's The Demon Fist of Mount Hua. There's The Legend of the Northern Blade. There's the Moon... Oh, Lord.
Moonlight Sculptor.
No, not Moonlight Sculptor. What? Not Moonlight Sculptor. There's something... Reaper of the Drifting Moon.
Oh.
Right? Mm-hmm. And now Sword Demon Island or something like that. But he does fantastic work. And whenever I come across writers who know what they're doing, or there's a particular art style that just tend to stand out, like how Demon Slayer came... Demon Slayer. Oh, gosh. What's that one, man? The one that everybody may hype about. The Manhwa Kyle. The one with the Shadow Monarch and stuff like that.
Oh, Solo Leveling.
Solo Leveling. When you have artists like that who come out and their art stands out so much that they redefine the genre, then I can't help but just, you know, fall in love with them.
I do, right? Agree.
But I've been listening to you guys talk about your favorite characters and why they're your favorite characters and so on. And it got me thinking, because we're expanding it beyond, we're not just geeks for any one particular thing. Our geekdom reigns very wide. Our empire reigns very wide. And as such, I was going through characters that stood out for me. I mean, like, there's Belgorath the Sorcerer, the best, greatest magician of all time. To hell with Gandalf. Although, enough respect to Gandalf. But Gandalf, with all his power, does not have the flair and the swag and the just don't give a shittiosity that is Belgorath the Sorcerer.
More than right? Dark Schneider?
More than Dark Schneider. Dark Schneider is just...
Dark Schneider business?
Dark Schneider is just metal as shit, right? But Belgorath has something else about him within the conventional realm of sci-fi and fantasy. So I thought about him. I also thought about Silver Surfer, who was my favorite superhero. But my favorite character of all time that reigns supreme above all else, hands down, is the vampire Lestat. Now, I know there are some people who might be listening to this podcast and they roll their eyes when they hear this. But Lestat became my favorite character of all time, not just because he was like the Brat Prince. He became like my Superman. He became my superstar as well. And I found myself living vicariously through Lestat.
Did you know that Lestat caused the downfall of Christianity within me? When I was in State College, all these girls that we used to hang out with were reading like the Anne Mayfair Rice witches and the Anne Rice novels. And I was like, what's that? Anne Rice. And I took a book called Memnock the Devil.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God. That's book 5, bro.
where Lestat meets the devil.
Yeah.
And the devil explains all the origins of yeah. how he became the devil.
Yeah.
And after I read that, having studied religion in high yeah. school, I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, if any of this is vaguely based on real life Christianity, then yeah. Christianity is like dead for me. It just doesn't make any sense.
I get it. I get it completely. And the entire Vampire Chronicles, or at least let's just say the original five books of the Vampire Chronicles, from Interview the Vampire to The Vampire Lestat, Tales of the Body Thief,
mm-hmm.
you know, Memnock the Devil, and so on. These books, to me, each one focused on a particular topic. Well, you would see certain themes being presented in each book.
Yeah.
Interviewed the Vampire, to me, was a sub-story. For a long time, I completely discredited that. We can leave this for the second part when we're getting into good stories. But we're talking about the character, so let's not stray too much. Lestat, I lived vicariously for Lestat. As I get to know the character and I saw the feats that he did and the encounters that he had, the relationships that he built, his philosophy changing over time, and the experiences that he had, along with the fantasy of just being impervious to damage, you know, being yeah. able to... All the fantastic stuff that comes with the quote-unquote tragedy of being a vampire.
Being literally bored.
Right.
With the power.
Lestat showed me that whereas all the other vampires were just so goddamn morbid. Sorry for the...
Yeah.
They were just morbid, all the other vampires. He, to me, showed that a vampire could live. There were vampires that were locking themselves up. There were those who go and say that they're the children of the devil, they don't deserve anything good in life, or they should resort to the shadows. Unless that is like, man, to hell with all of that. I'm going to be out there with humans. I'm going to be in the limelight. I will listen to beautiful music. I will meet people. I will make love to people. I will experience all there is in life to experience. And if there's questions, I want answers. And I'm not going to stop until I find answers. This is a taboo. To hell with the taboo. I will break it. He was like the irresponsible child. Everybody else was following the norms and trying to exist within the rules that are already set, and even trying to redefine the rules, but not in extreme sense. And Lestat is like, okay, yes, I read your Bible. I hear your scriptures. Now let's light all of that on fire and go and live life. And yep. man, I fell in love with Lestat, especially after encountering Louis. Louis was so mad depressing, you know.
Yeah.
There were people, I have a friend, and she's a super Louis fan, and her explanation, or part of her explanation, is that what the appeal of Louis was is that in all of this immortal vampiric stuff, Louis represented humanity. And I'm like, man, flip that. I don't care about no humanity. Humanity in every other story. We don't care about humanity. Show me what it's like to be immortal, to fly, to be telekinetic, to, if I wanted, dive down into the Pacific Ocean and go down the Mariana Trench and don't worry about nothing. You know, give me that. You know, but it was that. More than just the immortality, because we have encountered lots of immortals. But it was the fact that Lestat spat in the face everything else. He was a rock star. He questioned things, and it was just perfect for a teenager in college who's listening to Linkin Park and mm-hmm. encountering you know, Black Sabbath and Pantera and other, you know, rap and rock and roll.
Yeah.
Rebellious era, Marilyn Manson, Lestat de Leoncourt. You know,
yep.
So a nice way to sum up that, for if you were to give his book series a name, it'd be What to Do with Your Eternity. Exactly. You're just like, What to Do with Your Eternity?
Start the zombie apocalypse.
Wait, what? Okay, moving on.
That's a really, really good summary of what that series was and what Lestat was. Definitely, yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, man. Really love that. But we're going to segue now into what makes a good story, though. You know, I'm part of several different groups, as we all are. And one of the things that I have to endure in these literary groups, whether they're comic or otherwise, a person's living their best life, talking about things that they enjoy so much, about the manga or the comic or the book that they're reading. And me having to listen to that, and I'm just rolling my eyes. Not because I'm an elitist bastard. That could be. But also because I've read a lot of books, and I've been around a lot of writers and critics. And over time, through osmosis, you get to pick up ideas as to why this thing is good. Mm-hmm. You know, you hang around enough movie critics, then you know why it is that this movie is good. Music, likewise. So there are certain things that stipulates like, or points out what it is that makes a story very good. Essentially, what it boils down to, from my understanding, is how the elements of a story are handled, pieced together, and the synergy that you create mm-hmm. with them. How well it is that you as a writer can execute that. The elements of the story being, you know, characters, dialogue, plot, atmosphere, setting, you know, those sort of stuff. And how well are these handled. The story. The best writers to me are the ones who are able to take these things and tie them seamlessly, almost effortlessly. Now, all writers don't handle all of them very well, but they still tell very good stories because within the areas that they're very good at, they do a very good job. For mm-hmm. example, not Piers Anthony, David Eddings, for example, in his fantasy series, The Illenium. Dave Eddings was the first writer that I encountered who told his entire story through dialogue. This man did not give paragraphs of exposition describing what the landscape looked like or anything. His stories were completely dialogue-driven, but yet still you got a very good sense of the world and everything else about it. So now, with that general understanding, I turn to you guys, and I would ask you two things. One, what is a story that you can point to and say, okay, this is an excellent story? You know, it may or may not be your favorite story, mm-hmm. but you can point to it and say, this is an excellent story. And if you could share one or two reasons, or however, why you would say that's an excellent story. You want to take a swing, Remy?
I'm going to start out with this. Back in the day, when I was in high school, I used to get a particular book taken away from me by a teacher, which was Star Wars novels. And the ones that I've always wanted them to make the movies for these, but...
The stuff that's no longer canon?
Yes. The writer is Timothy Zahn, mm-hmm. and he wrote a trilogy called the Thrawn Trilogy. And it's made up of three books, which are The Last Command, Heir to the Empire. Well, Heir to the Empire is the first one. The Last Command is the last one. And I think there's Dark Force Rising in the middle. So Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and The Last Command. And it basically takes you through what happened to Luke after Return of the Jedi. And the way the writing in it is so good because it brings in all these great... The settings are really good. Like the different planets they go into. The flora and fauna of the planets is well developed. The cultures of the different aliens are very well developed.
So what
I find is not done a lot in Star Wars nowadays. They just have these aliens just around the place because they want to make a costume. And it's, oh, it's funny. This is a funny looking alien and they make funny looking noise. They make funny noises. But Timothy Zahn wrote these cultures of the different alien races. Like, you could understand that this race doesn't breathe air, they breathe something else, so they have to use a rebreather, and or they don't speak in basic, they speak in their own tongue, or they speak through telepathy, or they speak through sounds, and it's well developed in that way. And then the politics of the universe, with the Empire's view of why they're doing what they're doing, why they think it's right, what they needed to lead them after the Emperor was destroyed, and how it clashes with the rebels' view of what they wanted.
Right.
And then all these different factions interacting within those novels, it was just such deeply done that to me it's like a shame that they never followed off. Instead, they just kind of stole some of the great characters. Like, for instance, Thrawn is probably one of the best villains that they ever made in Star Wars because of how well he's written. It really gives you, like, a scope of his intelligence, his belief system, how he approached, like, space combat, how he approached dealing with enemies, negotiating, everything, not about just kill this person and that person. Everything was about pieces of the puzzle to put together a campaign with greater reaching goals that you didn't even realize that he thought of this so far in advance, and how he taught his subordinates led them not through fear, but through respect, and respecting his intelligence and respecting his demeanor and how he carried himself. So yeah, that's...
You brought up two very interesting elements there of, you know, good storytelling, which is world development or world building and character development. World building to me is super important because world building is what gets you, it's a main driving force for your immersion into the world. It's what, one of the things that helps make you a fan of a franchise or many writers tend to have issue with that. World building takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of imagination. And how deeply a writer gets into it also indicates how much they actually care about the world. For example, with David Eddings, I mean, he would take the time to include stuff beyond just politics and religion. He would go into economics. They would talk about currency and currency exchange, language, history. You get into the things that are more than just the main characters, and now we are invested. And that also adds to the longevity of the story and possible, you know, expansions of that story, creating, you know, side stories and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
With Star Wars is built off of that. There's a lot of world building done by the other writers who came on board, building off of George Lucas's idea. We also see a lot of world building in like Warhammer 40K, right? Where it can take on a life of its own. The trading card games that we play as well, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Magic the Gathering, immense world building being done there.
Yeah.
You know? So there's that. The other thing was, as we mentioned, character development. And you mentioned something about Thrawn in that he was a very intelligent and calculating character with a very long view of things. I find that those types of characters are very hard to portray, especially nowadays. Intelligent characters on a whole. Would you say that that is true, or
to portray in live action, or just to portray in general? In writing. General,
in writing as well as in live action.
It can be. Well, I'm not a professional writer, so I can't really say how much thought goes into like developing a character.
But I mean, with that kind of depth. The challenge that is being faced by the writer is that you have to write a character that is smarter than you.
Yes. Agree. So you're probably doing a lot of research.
A lot. Yeah, I usually find that it's very hard to portray intelligent characters, and then they tend to fall back on like shorthand, you know, I thought of this before you did, you know, or they get into a lot of technobabble and pseudoscience. What about you, Kyle? Was there a story that stood out for you? What made that story great to you? Or you would point at it and say, hey, this is a really good story.
Okay, I'm going to take this from two different angles. I'm going to take it from something more recent, where Remy mentioned his predecessor, but I'm going to stick to Dune. Now, Dune, a lot of people have found the movie to be boring to them, that are not into that kind of sci-fi aspect. But Dune, I watched it for the first, maybe last month, and it was on my to-do list of things to watch, because I did love Star Wars. And the world, it just pulled me in. The whole aspect of the cultures, the creeds, the religions, everything just left a mystery to me, and I just wanted to know more. The pacing, again, you don't just rush into things. It was very slow paced, and that's what I liked about it, because it just flushed out characters, flushed out events. It made things hit home harder. Sometimes you watch a movie and the movie is so in, even an episode is, you're so into it that it feels like, wait, it's only that amount of time pass. Or sometimes even it just felt like it was a longer spent amount of time. For instance, in Dune, they had this on the planet that they were mining spice from.
Arrakis.
Arrakis. Mm-hmm. You had the people of that planet. Now, we on this planet Earth see how people kill for water, a necessity in life. They over there, they are on a different level of water conservation. Your whole, their suits take all their sweat and turn it into water. Urine, water. They spit into something constantly to refine it and get back water. And they are about, hey, we are about each other. You're part of the Al-Kree. We don't live by your standards, but by our own. And I'm just looking at these people and it's like, okay, they're from different planets. They're a different race of people. But you can live on a planet, thinking about it from my aspect, would be any minute some giant sandworm can come and just gobble you up. And not, when I say giant, maybe one big enough to eat off half Antigua in just one gulp. And I'm just like, and you just worship everything about your planet. This is a good planet to you. And then now you go into the whole aspect of the star, the prince, and
the culture of Arrakis is like very deep. The Fremen culture is very well developed in that story.
And I'm just like, my gosh. And it was portrayed so well in the movie to me. I just couldn't turn away from it. I didn't feel lost at any point, meaning like, hey, I need to walk away from this movie or something. It's boring or anything. I was like, what's going on for it? And now the star, then you hear him. And now you have, just for people to understand it, a kind of Jedi situation with the star due to his mother, influence from his mother. He has some kind of, almost like the force, quote unquote, abilities. And you wonder, okay, now where is this going to lead him to now? He's seeing all kind of flashbacks at the time. He's seeing like things that can possibly happen in the future. Things if he had gone to this, from what I'm gathering, from this pathway in life. And it's like he's learning from seeing things in the future. And then like he learned it himself and took it upon himself and now gone a different pathway. So that pathway then. And I'm just watching all this and like, okay, this the concepts, just to say, concepts that are out of the norm pull me to a story. Mm-hmm. World building holds me to a story. Characters, thought patterns that I cannot really conceptualize living on this planet pull me into a good story. Why say two part? I'm going to go to something, well, older but still newer than Dune. Because Dune is a very old story. But Boogie Pop Phantom, an anime. This anime is technically about death. Why do I say death? You're watching this character. Every episode you're watching this character, you see them going about their life. You see all these kind of things going down tragically in this person's life. Or just, not even necessarily tragically, just going out. People just living life. By the end of the episode, death just walks up to you and goes, you're dead. That's it. You were watching this whole episode getting invested in this character. Uh-huh. And next thing you know, they're dead. That's it for them. That's it for them. On to the next story. And the star of the story is literally death. She walks around, reaps you and goes about her business. Next episode.
I like that you brought that particular aspect up, because that's another interesting thing, and it helps towards making a story good, where characters are not protected by the plot.
Exactly.
The plot armor. I find that when we get a situation where the characters can die off at any minute, that you can get really invested in that. And you may even find yourself tying up, you know, becoming more and more invested in those characters. But yeah, it was pretty good that you brought that up. Now, we're coming on to the time right now. So I would just like to share some last thoughts. A lot of the stuff that we've spoken about here, some persons would be familiar with it, but I would believe that most are not. So to use examples of things that people are more familiar with, I'm going to rattle off some titles and I will tell you, okay, if this is a good story or that, if it's a bad story, objectively. So, Naruto, for example. The original arc, up until the fight between Sasuke and Naruto under that waterfall. That's good storytelling. Mm-hmm. Right? It's built in such a way, there's great world building, there's great character development, the premise was already established, the villains are already established, the power system of the world is established. the dynamics are all being established. Everything is clear and there's great synergy between those stories. Bleach, bad storytelling. I love Bleach. I am a huge fan of Bleach, right? But there's too many inconsistencies in terms of the story and the development and all that kind of stuff. It feels like it's being just pulled out of thin air and being put together in a very haphazard way. Right?
It's true.
Hunter x Hunter, Yu Yu Hakusho, great storytelling. These are good stories. Some people may say they're just good, they're just okay. I think they're pretty good, objectively.
I would say rewatch Yu Yu Hakusho.
Rewatch Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah.
I rewatched Yu Yu Hakusho.
That's why I'm saying, when I rewatched Yu Yu Hakusho, I got a better appreciation of Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last season is terrible, but
yeah,
other than that,
reasons why, but we know the reasons why.
It's like, it feels very rushed.
It was.
One Piece is okay. One Piece is okay. It does great work in storytelling, with world building, great work with the characters, but the pacing of One Piece is what, to me, drags it down a lot. It's built for like, things. Same as Dragon Ball Z. Dragon Ball Z is terrible storytelling, but Dragon Ball Z is not about storytelling.
Dragon Ball Z has no discernible story, really.
It's just action, man.
Yeah. So these are some examples that I think some people could relate to. And outside of that, The Matrix, the original one, that's good storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Lord of the Rings, the adaptations, good storytelling. The original source material is fantastic. He set the tone for everything.
And I'll just interject and just say, we'd like to hear from you guys.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd probably set up a Facebook page or something where you can leave some comments, or you can even just record a message, send it to Glenn or myself, and we will like talk about whatever.
We definitely need to set up socials. So with that, any recommendation, guys, of a good story to read or watch? Kyle?
I'm going to stick with what I was talking about earlier, Boogie Pop Phantom.
Boogie Pop Phantom. Remy?
Sandman by Neil Gaiman.
Oh, man. Yes. Infinity Wars by Jim Starlin, the graphic novel. So thank you guys for hanging out with us, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
Yes, until we meet again.